Welcome to episode 334 of Troubadours and Rock On Tours with yours truly, EW Conundrum Demure. This is the first episode of our 2019-2020 season, and we are excited about it. As is our tradition, we feature in the first episode of a new season our regular contributor, farmer, winemaker, and our resident philosopher, Almighty Todd. Todd and I have a grand conversation about yellow jackets, book jackets, suit jackets, and straight jackets, among other things. We also have an EW essay titled New England. We have a poem by the great Walt Whitman, O Captain, My Captain, and another poem by yours truly titled Kiss. And all of this, as is always the case, is infused, imbued with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It's so nice to have you with us. Let's get to it. Episode 334 of Troubadours and Rock On Tours.
Yep, 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 boom. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la, ba doom. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la, ba doom. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la, ba doom. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la. Yep, 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 boom, 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 did a job. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la.
Every morning about this time, she gets me out of my bed at 5 for a job.
Sha la la la, sha la 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 la.
After breakfast every day, she throws a warning past my bed.
Never, never say. Get a job, sha la la la, sha la 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 la, ba doom, sha la la la, sha la 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 la, ba doom, sha la la la, sha la 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 la, ba doom, sha la la la, sha la 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 la. Yep, 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 boom, 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 get a job, sha la la la, sha la 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 la.
Well, when I get the papers, I read it through and through, and my girl never fails to say.
Tell me that I'm lying by the job that I never could find. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la, ba doom. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la, ba doom. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la, ba doom. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la. Yep 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 yep, boom 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 boom, get a job. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la. Never could find. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la, ba doom. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la, ba doom. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la, ba doom. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la. Yep 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 yep, boom 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 boom, get a job. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la, good job. Get a job.
New England. I had a dream last night, and it reminded me of a time when I was innocent and more selfish than I am today. It was sort of nice. The innocent part, at least. The selfish component, not so much. When you see these two aspects of human existence in tandem, it becomes clear how they overlap and feed each other. I was in my 20s, looking for love and understanding in New England, because in my sense of things, I deserved it. We all deserve it, I am sure, I also thought, but me, I am a bit more special. Then you find someone kind, beautiful, intelligent, and they really care about you. Perhaps they're driven by their own self-absorbed sense of the world and what it should afford them. But who knows? Maybe it is just you. This, of course, isn't a moment of insight and reflection that occurs then. After you mess it up, maybe, if you are lucky, so that you might live on, learned in matters of love, want, and need, at least. So naive and self-indulgent. I did, though, enjoy the time I shared with that beautiful fellow lonely soul seeking a home. Today, it reminds me of what to seek and cherish, what to nurture and to not take for granted. Less naive and less selfish, I suppose.
Almighty Todd, is that you?
Conundrum, yes, that must be you.
It's so good to hear your voice, my friend.
It's been a while, yes.
Yeah, it's been about 4 months since you've been on Troubadours and Rock on Tours, our resident philosopher, farmer, winemaker up there in Stockbridge, Vermont. How's it going?
Well, I guess I'm upright and I'm not institutionalized, so that's... I got that going for me.
It's only a matter of time.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. A lot has transpired in 4 months. A lot transpires in a day, for sure. And
these days, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Heightened awareness, you know, can't help but have the antenna up at all times, which is... good in some ways because it lends to a certain amount of mindfulness if if you're on that path, but it also, it can be exhausting.
Yeah.
To be responsive.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned a couple of things there that sometimes are in conflict. You know, I mean, you want to be aware, and you also want to be mindful. You know, the notion of mindfulness in the context of like Buddhism or Taoism, it is.
Although I'd have to say that it's actually, I don't want to say it's being culturally appropriated, but there's certainly a whole professional sector being built up around mindfulness that is not necessarily religious, and it's also not professional psychiatry. Just because I'm seeing it happen, I know some people that are doing that kind of work. I find it interesting.
Is it
possibly problematic in some ways, because you know, if you're doing it on your own and there's no one checking on your own mindfulness, if you're teaching mindfulness to other people, that can be problematic.
But, how so?
Well, just, you know, I equate it to the same thing as, and I don't mean to offend anybody by this, but you know, in the evangelical community, basically, if you've read the Bible, or even if you haven't read the Bible, you can claim yourself to be a pastor and lead a flock, even though you may not have had any divinity training or ethical training to how you handle groups. And so you get these cultist type conglomerations around somebody with a certain slant on things, but isn't necessarily tethered, so to speak. So I you know, the same thing can happen in other religious communities. I mean, there is this idea of Zen sickness when you take your practice too far, that you actually becomes a detachment from reality, not just from detachment from things. So, and if that's something that you share with other people, that maybe is not such a good thing.
Yeah, well put. You know,
has, you know, responsibility. You know, there's an ethical responsibility whenever you're engaging in helping other people, you know, along a path like that. I train and teach martial arts, so I'm very cognizant of the role that I play in that relationship and how much responsibility I take and how much responsibility the person I'm working with needs to take for what's happening.
Yeah, you, for those who don't know, you teach in the vein and I guess learn in the vein of Aikido.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find it a useful practice on a lot of levels.
Yeah, well, you like to go out there and kick people's asses with it, right?
No. I mean, when people ask, like, you've been training for how long? You must be able to kick ass. I'm like, I don't know, but I know I can take a pretty good beating. Somebody's more likely to get tired out before they'd and give up.
Is that your strategy? that's not a bad one, I guess. I mean, it sounds Gandhi-esque or, you know, MLK-esque in a way.
At least that would be the goal, you know, that nobody gets hurt. But, you know, everybody's got a breaking point. Even my teacher said, geez, you know, if somebody jumped me in an alley, I wouldn't be worried too much about their their safety.
No. And you know, I gave you a list of things that I wanted to address, and you're hitting on them already. I mean,
sorry, getting ahead of you. Sorry.
No. No, there's no real plan to our conversation, really. As you mentioned the word tethered, we want to be tethered a bit ourselves to something. Otherwise, you know, it'll be just.
Oh yeah, if you and I get talking, they'll run out of airtime.
Yeah.
You have other stuff to do. You got some good music. You got some essays, some poetry, I'm sure.
Yeah. Thank you. You get me, man. You get me.
I'm just trying to keep my slot.
And so, well, you have it. You're one of the old, you know, the longest running contributors to the show, and that's for a reason, because you're good. Now, you wanted to talk about, and I don't know what you mean by these several words that you've strung together. So I'm curious. You texted me these words: yellow jackets, book jackets, suit jackets, and straight jackets.
Yep. It was kind of a free association, but at the same time, there are some mundane thoughts that have been rolling around, and they had kind of all coalesced in the last several days. The Yellow Jackets is a public service announcement, because Saturday afternoon I was up on Lake Champlain. My brother was getting married on Sunday, and I was doing some cleanup behind our place. Some limbs had fallen out of a tree, and I threw them into this low spot in the woods where I have been throwing stuff for years. And I stopped for a second to look down across the road. There's a church across the way, and there was somebody it was later in the afternoon. There was somebody pulling in to go into the church, which is not a normal time of day. And so I just was regarding it. I was trying to be mindful of the moment when all of a sudden I was surrounded by yellow jackets. So I had obviously thrown something into an area where they were living. And so I knew enough to get the hell out of there, but I got whacked two times on one of my right arm. And last summer I had an incident where I stepped on a nest out in the vineyard and got whacked several times on my right leg, right lower leg. And I ended up having to go to the hospital.
Wow.
Because I popped a bunch of Benadryl and Advil right away, got it on ice. I knew to take care of it, and Andrea was watching me because she was home. She was about to go to the studio. She said, I'll hang out for a little while, and it was not 15, 20, but more like half an hour, 45 minutes later. All of a sudden, she's like, your ears are looking really red. I said, yeah, my lips are feeling a little bit swollen, and then next second, I just broke out in hives everywhere.
Wow.
And she's like, okay, we're going to the hospital. Where they proceeded to keep an eye on me and hit me with some prednisone, which is a steroid, basically, and kept it at bay. But it was a 2 week healing process of that swelling going down and the inflammation going away. So, anyways, the point is that I'm developing a sensitivity to the yellow jacket venom. I may actually go through, there's a desensitivity process that you can go through taking small doses, and it helps reduce the chance of a bad response. But there was a guy that lived up on the top of the hill behind us about 5 years ago who died. Wow. He ran over a nest and took a lot of hits. Yellow jackets are responsible for a couple hundred deaths a year because they do live in the ground. It's easy to step on them and all of a sudden be getting hit. They can sting you multiple times, unlike a bee who only's got one shot at you. And their venom is pretty potent. And you can go into anaphylactic shock. So it's something to be concerned about, especially because up at the wedding this weekend, right behind where they were going to have the arbor, there was this willow tree down by the lake, and the day before the wedding, they found that there was this massive yellow jacket nest underneath it. So we had to rope the whole thing off so that nobody would go in there. But the day that I went to the hospital last year, there was already somebody there had been stung. The next three people into the ER had all been stung. It was about 2 weeks from now last year, because this is the time of the year when the nests are the biggest. They have the most population in them, and the days are getting shorter, so they're getting a little bit, their food sources are diminishing. They start getting a more aggressive. If you kill a yellow jacket, it emits a pheromone that tells everybody else where you are and what you did.
Mm-hmm.
And they will come after you. So within 15 feet of the nest, you're in bad trouble, so run if you get hit by them. But the point is this time of year is specifically bad, so it's worth being aware and paying attention. If you do see a nest, don't mess with it. You know, it's going to be gone in a couple of weeks, or if it does have to be eradicated, you got to do it right. Can't do it with fire or water. It's got to be done with pesticide, or you might even want to call in a pro. So anyways, this time of year, don't mess with the yellow jackets because they're for real.
Good advice. Yes. Good advice. Up there in Vermont too, man, it's a little bit more wild maybe than many other places that are listening. Well, maybe not. We have a lot of listeners in rural areas.
Yeah, and the first bad experience I had was actually when I was at Binghamton going to school. And the director of orientation I was going to be away for a couple weeks. This time of year, school is back in session. Orientation was done, but he asked me if I would keep track of his cats and mow the lawn. And I mowed over a nest there. And it was just in the suburb and got whacked a few times in the leg.
Man, you got a thing with yellow jackets.
I know. I know. Well, yeah. I have to work on my mindfulness about keeping an eye out for them. I know you got to keep moving here. So book jackets. I was just thinking about how, you know, I heard, you know, kids going to school were being doled out iPads for their studies and learning. And I was thinking back to when we were in school and when you got your school books this time of year, it was like this important thing you did that you built.
Cover them.
You covered them. You know, that was one of the things you did. You were expected to cut up a paper bag and there was a method to doing it and taping it on so that you would protect your book because
right.
It wasn't just your book. It was the kid's book from last year and it was going to be the kid's book from next year likely. So you had to protect it. This was an important, learning tool. And now, and the book cost how much back then? Who knows?
Not nearly as much as
an iPad.
Right.
And I wonder if, you know, if kids were made to build their own iPad sleeves these days, if they would maybe think differently about their interaction with that piece of equipment.
Well, that's a good point, and I like to add, too. I just took my kids out. We got a list of what you needed for class the first day emailed to us, and book covers. So now you don't even make your own book covers, as you just mentioned, we used to do. And it is a craft that you learn with a brown paper bag or maybe some the funnies from the Sunday newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
But now you go and you buy them. They're pre-made, and you just slide them on.
Oh, geez, what fun is that?
Exactly. And it's expensive, too. You know, it's like $6-7 a book.
Really?
Jacket.
Does anybody do it the old-fashioned way?
Not that I've seen. No. I try to talk to your kids about, no, let's do it. No, everybody will laugh at us. You got to do it. You got to get this sort, this kind, with this design. You know, everything is designer and fitting in. And
well, because, I mean, that was part of putting the brown paper bag on, is then you kind of did your own designs on it.
Right, exactly. So now we go to suit jackets. How do you get to suit jackets?
Suit jackets, I've been thinking about, because I had to, I was going to go to the wedding, and I said, hey, is this, what kind of, do I need to wear my tux? What's the deal? And they said, no, it's casual. Wear whatever you want. So it was casual, but my brother did wear a suit. He and his fiance dressed up. She didn't wear a traditional wedding dress, but she wore a nice dress. So they were really, they outclassed us all. But I was thinking more about the traditional suit because it does seem to be somewhat in decline, or where suits are worn, they're not normal traditional. There are a lot of traditional suits out there that basically came around after World War II. It was suits have always been like something that a gentleman wore. It was a way to show that you were above the fray or the riffraff.
You had a little class.
It was a class
status
thing. Yes, exactly. And after World War II is when it really started to become mainstream as a kind of a status or a cultural symbol. And, you know, it fully impermeated the business world. But I think it's fraying at the edges, to make a pun. These days, companies have their casual days where people don't have to wear a suit and tie. So I found that the suit, which used to be kind of a marker of classiness or sophistication, in a lot of cases now is a mask of class or sophistication that covers up, you know, maybe less than classy or even boorish people behind it. And I can think of a few that are often in the news wearing bad suits that
fat old 45, yeah, I'm thinking.
Ill-fitting suits that do nothing to hide the
blubbering buffoonery.
Whatever, yeah. There's so many adjectives that you could, but something less. Something less. So it's really just it's used as a shield or a cover up more than an actual adornment. So anyways, I mean I don't wear a suit unless I have to. You know, weddings, funerals, and business meetings, and that's it.
Yeah, you know, but
you're a professor, you know, so you, I don't know, I was going to ask you about that. If you wear you probably don't wear a suit, but you probably still wear a jacket.
Yeah, I usually do, in a tie some days. Some days, you know, when the weather's warm, I'll wear shorts, you know, and a button down or what have you.
Bermuda shorts and a suit jacket?
I've done that, you know, Angus Young-ish, right? From AC/DC for you folks out there that don't know the reference. Yeah, I think it's fun to dress up, and it's an artistic, creative endeavor, you know, a way to exercise your personal sense of style. Also, it's a way to be respectful in certain scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
When you're invited to a particular type of gathering, you want to show respect presenting yourself in a way that looks like you made an effort, that you care.
Yeah, you belong there.
Right. Right, and I think even people look at you differently when you are dressed in a stylish, dapper way.
Or in the suit. That's what I mean. Is like, you know, the smarmy used car salesman. Would you pay attention to him the same way you do when he's in a suit if he was in, you know, ripped up jeans and a dirty T-shirt?
Probably not, but as you mentioned, you know, the stink still comes through with a person that is smarmy, or, you know, the suit can't cover it up.
It can't cover it up, but I think it still does inflect the perception, or it, you know, deflects certain perception, you know, abilities to perceive things. It commands a certain amount of respect, even from somebody who deserves no respect.
So should we look through the suit, not wear the suit, bring back the suit?
That's the empty suit. Yeah, know when you're looking at an empty suit.
The emperor without any clothes. Is that the same thing?
I think it basically is.
Yeah. And then you wanted to talk about, and we kind of have been alluding to a certain individual this pertains to, this person probably needs one. Straight jackets.
That was totally the free association that I got to. I was like, there were three jackets wasn't enough. You asked me for some things, so, and I was like, yeah, that's what we need right now. But it turns out that straight jackets are, even though, you know, one flew over the cuckoo's nest, you know, they had them there, and you could see how they were utilized in mental institutions.
Ken Kesey reference. All right.
And but they don't use them there anymore because they found that that's really not an appropriate way to handle folks with mental illness. But they are still used in custodial arrangements, like in prisons and jails, probably with people who have mental health disorders. But there's, from what I got, I had to read up on it a little bit. I was like, you know, why did that come to mind? I looked. There is a company that still makes them, but they only sell about 100 a year. So they're in a real niche market.
Oh my God, 100 years.
Yeah, there's. I saw that, and on Amazon, there's a costume straight jacket that you can get. So they probably sell more of those than the real ones.
Well, Halloween's not too far off. So straight jackets, suit jackets, book jackets, yellow jackets, and one flew over the cuckoo's nest. And we mentioned the cuckoo in charge. How about a little Alabama and fake news?
Oh, it just doesn't end. What hill in Alabama are we dying on here? I hope. He's quintupling down on. It's turning a gaffe into a guffaw. Basically, I'm assuming you've seen all of the memes going around the internet today of fixing things with Sharpies.
Yeah, and that's alluding to the diagram that I guess probably came from a legitimate organization, and it wasn't fitting his story, so they got a Sharpie and extended the storm where it's tracking. And so
into Alabama.
And they just Sharpied.
Yeah.
They just extended it. It's hilarious. If it weren't so like disrespectful to folks who are truly dealing with
these problems and trying to put the right information out there so that people know what to do.
Right.
And so it's just stupid and dangerous. It's just an opportunity to be hyperbolic and exaggerative.
To include his base, perhaps, too.
I don't know. That's just the modus operandi.
Yeah, I have to be right.
I have to be right about this, because as soon as he's not right about something, then he gets to be questioned by even his base.
Yeah, and also, you know, his narcissistic world will fall apart.
Exactly.
And that can't be, that can't be allowed, you know.
Well, it is a pathological state at this point. And the fact that the other powers that be haven't found a way to rein it in does, you know, prove to me that there are additional guardrails that need to be put into the checks and balances of process, because this has gone on far too long,
and far too far. You know, I mean, for so many years we just trusted that an individual and other, you know, individuals in the higher echelons of power wouldn't cross certain lines. It was just a matter of trust.
Well, it was a trust in that they would have moral and ethical boundaries,
exactly,
that they would adhere to, that any human being should consider adhering to.
We have to learn from this, hopefully. If it's not our demise,
no,
but I don't think it will be.
No, but we have to learn that there have to be lessons, and there has to be kind of a reconciliation, because there are a lot of people that have been duped by this, and they can't let go of it, and it's going to be really painful for them on the other side of this, I think, if we get past it into a more stable state of affairs. It's going to be hard for a bunch of people to realize that they've been conned.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest. Yeah, you say reconciliation, and I'll add to that something, a phrase that Nelson Mandela threw out with his folks after apartheid was ended, and he took the reins of South Africa: truth and reconciliation.
Yes, truth and reconciliation, exactly.
We need that. You're right. If we're going to grow, if we're going to learn, if we're going to be healthy as a people, as a society. Talking to Almighty Todd here on Troubadours and Rock on Tours, and man, we only have a few minutes left already. The conversation is coming to a close this go-round.
You pick the direction then.
Well,
I
have a couple. Well, thank you. Captain, my captain. Is that, that's a little Whitman, isn't it? Oh, Captain,
my captain.
Captain.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's to Lincoln. He wrote that, Abraham Lincoln. I have on my list chi, perception, the right way, the noble eightfold path, and autumn.
Ooh.
You grab whatever you like to grab.
Ooh, wow, that's a lot. The right way. I was wondering what exactly you meant by that, as in like the right way to get things done, or
in the context of Buddhism, really. The right way is a phrase that I've come across very, very often when I'm reading certain Buddhist teachings. Lately, I've been reading some Thich Nhat Hanh, and the Vietnamese Buddhist,
mm-hmm.
and he mentions the right way, the right view, right thinking. All of that is what I'm talking about.
Yes, and that's you're talking about the Eightfold Path when you're talking about. Right. And I've heard other people refer to it as correct view or correct resolve. This is just something that I'm working on myself recently, is that the word right is loaded. In the political sense, every time we refer to the alt-right, or the far right. When you use the word right, you're implicitly affirming correctness. And I'm past the point where I'm going to allow myself on a regular basis to use that. So from now on, I refer to that side of the political spectrum as radical regressives.
I like it.
Because framing is really important. And with this person in charge, he tends to be able to set the framing. And everyone's trying to play catch up, and they try to argue inside those frames. And that's a bad dynamic. So that said, for the sake of this conversation, right view, right resolve, right speech, right conduct, these are kind of moral obligations, not just for society, but for the development of a human being. And really taking, in a way, these are like the these are like the Buddhist eight commandments, as the Ten Commandments are to Christianity. These are rules that if you follow them, at the very least, you will not be sowing discord in your own life and the life of people around you that cause stress and problems and friction when we're trying to find a progressive, positive way through life that doesn't aid the forces of destruction in the world. And so, you know, the same way you can look at how many of the Ten Commandments has our friend in charge violated. If you look at the eight divisions, how many of those are not adhered to on a daily basis? Because these are just kind of basic building blocks of wisdom.
Do you know what they are, the eight? Can you rattle them off?
I pulled them up because I knew like seven of them, and I was like, what the heck's the other? Because I'm not a Buddhist, but I've put time in the past into studying it. So it was very good for me to go back and read through them. But right view is seeing ourselves in the world and realize that our actions have consequences. And so we don't exist in a vacuum. It's not all about us. The right resolve or right intention is kind of taking up a religious path and reducing our attachments to the world, you know, kind of home life, and moving us towards a place of kindness, such that we understand that the world is unfolding and we are part of the opening of life, not the closing down of it. That's my sense. Right speech is don't say stupid stuff. Don't be rude. Don't lie. Don't gossip. So far of the three, we're striking out with our current administration. Right conduct or action. No killing or causing injury, no taking what is not given to you, no overt sexual acts, and relieving oneself of material desires. Okay, there's four that are out. Right livelihood. Basically, only take up the space that you need to. They talk about in terms of, you know, just beg in order to feed yourself. You don't need to do anything else. That may be a little extreme, but the idea is don't consume or accumulate more resources than you need for your own sustenance. And that's a big problem. You know, that's our 1% problem these days, where people are assuming vast amounts of wealth that are beyond their ability to spend in any useful way. Except that it's not beyond their ability. They're just choosing not to spend it in a useful way that goes back to feeding the progression of human civilization. So that's a problem. And that's another problem with this guy. Right effort is basically trying to keep yourself in a place where you don't allow your unwholesome states of being to take over your decision making or to lead your your life, but that you do it from a place of quietude and a place of righteousness. I don't know. I think there are people that are deceived into thinking that their righteousness makes it right, but don't necessarily see the unwholesomeness of their actions. Then they start getting a little more abstract, which is right mindfulness, which is really trying not to be absent-minded ever, trying to be in the moment and be aware of what is going on. Now, see, this is where I can kick myself for, you know, looking across the street at that church and watching the person drive in and not immediately knowing that the yellow jackets were coming in on me. But I was enough in the moment that I wasn't still standing there. I didn't get bit, you know, stung 17 times. I only got two because I got the hell out of there. So I'm going to give myself a little bit of credit there. Even though I was starting to drift off, I wasn't so far away that I couldn't save myself from a bad situation. That's the problem these days with people reading their cell phone, crossing the street when the light's not there and getting whacked by a car. You know, that's, you know, being able to be, being, allowing ourselves to be drawn into a place where we're no longer in the world and paying attention to what's going on around us. You want to avoid that. And then the last one is right, samadhi, which is the, is your meditation practice and moving through your, the various levels of meditation practice to achieve higher levels of being, which that's maybe the hardest one because you got to sit down to do it or stay in one place to do it. And the different strains of Buddhism kind of interpret what that part of the path is or how you should approach it. But what it does mean is that you should sit, you should meditate at least a little bit. And we're at a point now where, thankfully, I know that even in schools, they're teaching kids at a young age how to sit down, take a deep breath, and take stock of what they feel like and where they're at. I know that there are certain religious factions in the Christian world that are terrified of this and of yoga and anything that gives people insight into their own selves, because they don't, they'd rather an external authority decide what that is. But I think that that's a great thing for people in general to learn, and the younger the better, that there is a meta awareness that you can have, that when you get caught up in your emotions, that there should be an outlet valve where you can step back and say, whoa, what's going on here? Why am I getting so excited? Because that's a huge part of being a full human being, is having the ability to see ourselves in the world and not just ride our either emotional waves or our mental cycles. Because neither of them is really us.
It's not really us, no. Almighty Todd, that's a wonderful place to pause our conversation until next time. Up in Stockbridge, Vermont, Almighty Todd, our resident philosopher here on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. Thank you so much, my friend. I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Take care of yourself, my brother. I talk to you again soon.
Ciao.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we have something special down here at Birdland this evening, a recording for Blue Note Records.
What's that? hopping in your dome, it's a zone and bop. Funk infusion, a flyer losing, keeps you coasting on the rhythm you're cruising. Up, down, round and round, rhymes profound, but nevertheless, you got to get down. Fantasy freak through the beat, so unique, you move your feet and sweat from the heat. Back to the fact, I'm the Mac, and I know that. The way I kick the rhyme, some will call me a poet. Poem steady flowing, growing, showing sights and sound. Caught in the groove, in Fantasia I'm found. Many tripped and tore upon the rhymes they soared to an infinite height, to the realm of the hardcore. Here we go, off I take ya. Dip trip, flip Fantasia. The jam, boogie woogie jam slam, bust the dialect, I'm the man in command. Come flow with the sounds of the mighty mic master, rhyming on the mic, I'm bringing suckers to disaster. Buku ducks, but I still rock Nike with the razzle dazzle, a star I might be. Scribble, jabble, scrabble on the microphone, I babble as I fix the funky words into a puzzle. Yes, 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 on and on as I flex, get with the flow, birds manifest, feel the vibe from here to Asia. Dip trip, flip Fantasia, ow.
Captain, My Captain by Walt Whitman. O Captain, my Captain, our fearful trip is done. The ship has weathered every rack, the prize we sought is won. The port is near, the bells I hear, the people all exulting, while follow eyes the steady keel, the vessel grim and daring. But O heart, 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 O the bleeding drops of red, where on the deck my captain lies, fallen cold and dead. O captain, my captain, rise up and hear the bells. Rise up, for you the flag is flung, for you the bugle trills, for you bouquets and ribbon wreaths, for you the shores a-crowding. For you they call the swaying mass, their eager faces turning. Here, Captain, dear father, this arm beneath your head, it is some dream that on the deck you've fallen cold and dead. My captain does not answer, his lips are pale and still. My father does not feel my arm, he has no pulse nor will. The ship is anchored safe and sound, its voyage closed and done. From fearful trip, the victor ship comes in with object won. Exult, O shores, and ring, O bells. But I, with mournful tread, walk the deck my captain lies, fallen, cold, and dead.
Caballero, ahí acaba de entrar Guatusi, ese mulato que mide 7 pies y pesa 169 libras. Y cuando ese mulato llega al solar, todo el mundo dice, a correr, que ahí llegó Guatusi, el hombre más guapo de La Habana. Guatusi, Guatusi,
¿qué quiere?
Oye, me dicen que tú eres guapo.
A mí, todo me tiene miedo.
No me digas que a ti te tiene miedo porque yo sí que me fajo con cualquiera.
Más grande que yo no hay ninguno.
Ah, 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 vamos a fajarnos.
Cuando quieras.
Nos fajamos, Guatusi.
Ah.
Nos bebemos la sangre aquí ahora mismo. ¿Qué es lo que pasa?
Nah. esa.
Saca lo que tengo encima, que yo no te tengo miedo a ti.
Palo nada más.
Todo el mundo te tiene miedo en La Habana, caballero, pero yo.
Siete pies
no.
Tengo yo.
A mí no me importa que tú tengas siete pies. ¿Qué es lo que pasa? ¿Qué es lo que pasa, Guatuz? Dime. Conmigo no, porque yo de los guapos me río. Como te me río en la cara, Guatuz.
A correr.
Bien. Nos bajamos. Nos bajamos.
¿Qué? ¿Qué bueno?
A correr, caballero. Llega Guatuz. Bueno, por fin, ¿quién es que se va a pagar con Guatuz? ¿Quién es que se va a pagar con Guatuz? Nadie se va a pagar con Guatuzzi. ¿Pero por qué? ¿Le tienen miedo a Guatuzzi?
Siete pies, grande y feo. A
no,
correr todo el mundo.
No le tenga miedo a Guatuzzi, muchacho.
El que no huye, corre.
No, que va. Cuando Guatuzzi llega y dice, yo soy guapo, usted seguía saca 100 machetes y dice, bueno, ¿qué es lo que pasa? A mí sí que no como ese cuento. Y se cae que Guatuzzi se aplaca y se va para allá porque Guatuzzi es para que...
Indestructible,
ay, no podrán destruirme.
Indestructible,
echa para allá, déjame en paz.
Indestructible,
indestructible, indestructible, ese soy yo.
Indestructible,
algunas veces me asombro.
Indestructible,
pero sabe lo que pongo.
Indestructible,
no pare, no, canto si está sabroso.
Kiss. A yellow soft-edged like silk flower grazes my lips as I bend down to find the pen that fell out of my pocket, an unexpected kiss on an early September afternoon.
Oh!
And there you have it, episode 334 of Troubadours and Rock On Tours, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure, the kickoff of our 2019-2020 season. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, our regular contributor and resident philosopher, Almighty Todd. I'd like to thank our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, writer Pauline Kael, poet Walt Whitman, and these musical artists, Mills Brothers, Magnetic Fields, US3, Ray Barreto, Prince, Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli, Branford Marsalis, and of course, Terrence Blanchard too. Thank you so much for listening. Until next week, let's give it a go and try to enjoy this one. Take care.
Yip 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 yip. Sha la la la, sha la 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 la, ba doom. Sha la la la, sha la la la.